Welcome to a Tuesday edition of Locked On Heat. On today's show, it's part two of our weekly mailbag, and we've got plenty of good questions from the Locked On Heat lifers.
Including, what would Justice Winslow's extension mean for his place in the team's hierarchy, and what Josh Richardson should think of Rook One's extension? Thank you so much for listening and for subscribing. Now let's get to the show.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where we break down every news item, rumor, game, and more. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the Heat in the NBA for FanSided. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Romello, credentialed NBA writer who's covered the Heat and league at large for SB Nation and FanSided. You can follow me in my writing on Twitter at DRomello13.
It's part two of our weekly mailbag. If you missed part one, that posted on Monday, our usual mailbag day. You could check it out there. But because the Locked On Heat lifers sent in so many great questions, we had to break it up into two episodes. So let's get right into it. This next question comes from Mo Black, who asks, at this point, with the trade rumors and with Justice Winslow's extension, should Josh Richardson feel disrespected? An interesting question.
It is. I think the average fan assumes that disrespect or respect plays a factor. I don't think that's the case here. Do you?
I actually had this thought during one of Miami's preseason games when it was right after it was reported that the Heat had offered, and I think it was Mark Stein in the New York Times, reported that the Heat had offered Richardson a first round pick for Jimmy Butler. And Josh Richardson came out and played really, really well in that game. And he came out in the next game and played really, really well. And I did wonder if Richardson did... Because, look, we've seen this 100 times in the NBA. I mean, just as recently, like, Kyrie Irving found out that the Cavaliers almost traded him for Paul George, basically. And he was like, you know what, screw it, I'm out of here. And demanded a trade. Now, it's one thing when you're Kyrie Irving, you're an elite point guard, you've won a championship, and you kind of have that power and that influence to basically demand to be traded. If Josh Richardson demanded to be traded, people would be like, why? Who are you? So I get that, but still, you could feel disrespected. I wouldn't mind if Josh Richardson felt disrespected. Like, why wouldn't I? If he thinks he's better than Jimmy Butler, is as good or can get to that point, if I'm Josh Richardson, I'm thinking, like, you're really going to trade me, who's worked this hard and showed you this much and came and, like, stepped up for you guys when Deion got hurt last year and helped win us a bunch of games last December and January. You're really going to trade me for Jimmy Butler, who can't seem to get along with anybody his entire NBA career? You're really going to do that? I wouldn't mind it. I would have no problem if Josh Richardson felt disrespected. I'm not saying he should or shouldn't, but if he did, I wouldn't. Like, why not?
I agree with you, and I think that you kind of would want that... that fuel. And, you know, one of the things that I've mentioned a number of times is that part of what drives these athletes, these people, to get to this level, to be where they are, where there is one of 450 of them throughout the planet, to reach the NBA and to be that kind of player, you have to always have something driving you. It has to be something, whether it's a slight that's real or one that's perceived. You use that as motivation day in and day out to push you to do the extra workouts, to come in after hard games and shoot extra baskets, to get into the arena the next day on a day off and work extra hard. There's always something that pushes you there. So if that's what it takes for Richardson, that's fine. I just don't know that it's actually disrespect. Like, I don't know that he sees it that way. I think, if anything, this is the wake-up call for him to realize the mantra that we hear players say ad nauseum, that this is a business. And I think this is the first time he's realizing that. Because there's kind of like, look, I remember talking to Dwayne Wade this summer, and one of the things he mentioned was, you know, that injury back in 2007 after the championship, or 2000, was it 2007? Yeah, 2007, 2000, the 2006-2007 season after the ring, where he got injured and he missed most of the season. That was his wake-up call of the business aspect of the game. Because before that, it was all about doing what he loved and enjoyed the game, and he'd won a championship and achieved incredible levels of success doing it. But then he realized really quickly, damn, I could lose it all in a second. If you get that right injury in just such a way, all of a sudden the game that you've been playing for 15, 20 years is taken away from you. So at some point, every player comes to the realization that this is a business, and it's whether it's being traded, cut, etc. You know, you come to that conclusion. And for Butler, I'm sorry, for Richardson, it was one he was able to delay. I mean, he was with this team for the first 3 years of his career. Everything's been peachy. You know, he's worked hard. He's established himself as a part of this team. He's got a great extension. He's worked with his coaches, etc. And then the second that a better player, and Jimmy Butler is a better player, comes around and comes available, his name's included in trade talks. That's not to say that they would have liked to have, and you know, completed a deal without Richardson, but it's also the reality that Richardson's a good player and one that you can use to acquire an even better one. So I don't know that disrespect is the word necessarily, but motivation, absolutely.
You know, and look around the NBA. I mean, if Josh Richardson wasn't aware that this was a business, that the NBA was a business and kind of the whole what you were just talking about, yeah. I mean, you look at a guy like DeMar DeRozan, who's been nothing but loyal to Toronto and then shipped off for the idea of Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah.
You know, Isaiah Thomas last season, trading him for Kyrie Irving. I mean, you look at this guy, like, yeah, as soon as no matter what you've done, is Kyrie Irving a better player than Isaiah Thomas? No question. Is Kawhi Leonard, if healthy, a better player than DeMar DeRozan? 100%. And so is Jimmy Butler right now a better player than Josh Richardson? Absolutely. And so that's just how it works. If you have the opportunity to move a player in exchange for a better player, which is how the NBA works right now when stars get disgruntled and want to get on the move, then you just do it. I mean, that's just the way – that's just how this works. And so Richardson – you know, it's the blessing and a curse. When you are a good player outperforming a contract, you are extremely valuable, not just to your team, but to all the teams. And therefore, there's a higher chance that you get traded in that situation. So,
yeah, and I've got to address also in Mo's question, he mentions the Winslow extension. I don't think that's a motivation factor. I don't think that's a disrespect factor.
Good point.
To me, you know, the fact that Winslow's getting paid more, maybe that's what he's inferring.
Yeah.
I don't see it. I think when players look at other deals, there is a hierarchy. There is a, you know, there is a status symbol being achieved there and getting paid more. But I think they're friends and maybe even more than friends and more akin to brothers. And I think it's always about you get yours, you get paid, and whatever that does, that's fine with. I don't think the Winslow extension plays a factor so much as realizing.
I don't think that salary is going to play much of a factor in Miami's locker room anyway, because Tyler Johnson is making basically what Winslow and Josh Richardson are, more than what Winslow and Richardson are making this year combined.
And he's beloved in that locker room too. So it's not like anybody's holding it against Tyler for getting paid. You know, it's all about the brotherhood of the NBA. Nobody, you know, disparages another player for getting paid. You do what you do to get yours, and that's fine.
And Josh Richardson, I mean, his contract, yeah, it's annually not worth as much as Winslow, but we talked about this in part one. Yeah, I think that there is more of a commitment to Josh Richardson in his extension than there was to Winslow in his extension.
Good point.
You know, there is a more long-term commitment to me in that deal. Because it was 4 years, because it was, I don't believe there's a team option at the end. For Winslow, it's 2+1, and that one at the end is a team option. So Miami is basically able to walk away from this pretty quickly if the whole Winslow thing doesn't work out. So I think that extra $3 million a year, which is, because I thought that Winslow would basically get what Richardson got, $10 million a year, which I thought would have been fair. But I think that extra $3 million per year, basically, on average, is sort of the cost of a short-term contract for Miami. They're paying for the ability to basically walk away from this after 2 years.
Good point.
So if anybody should feel disrespected, it's Justice Winslow. But I don't think he does.
No, I think he's busy smiling on the way to the bank.
But
I wish somebody would disrespect me with $39 million.
The Heat are investing into Justice Winslow, which means they must be confident in his development, but what position will he be developing in? We'll talk about that next, but first, a quick reminder that our written Miami Heat season preview is available right now, and only for $3.99 if you buy it at gumroad.com/LOHeatPREV. Again, gumroad.com/LOHPREV, and it's free if you sign up as a Locked On Heat lifer at our Patreon page at patreon.com/LockedOnHeat, which is $5 a month but gives you access to a whole bunch of good stuff all season long. Trust me when I say that the preview is a bargain. 55 pages of Miami Heat goodness, equally as informative as it is entertaining. A bunch of columns, a bunch of artwork, a bunch of cool stuff in there, so definitely check that out. You know, ever since I started this podcast, people have been asking me for advice. I don't know why. Maybe it's because I just have a podcast. But usually, It's what team to bet on this week. And the truth is, I don't know who's going to win. But if you think you know, you got to check out MyBookie. Remember, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. That's why I always tell people to bet with MyBookie. Trust me, guys. They are your best bet this season. They've been in business for years, have great reviews online, and their mobile site is easy to use. Lay down some cash and win big today. I would only recommend a service to my listeners that's been good to me, and that's why I'm urging you to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay. They have in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business, and for you fantasy guys out there, you can even bet the over-under on how many fantasy points a player will score each game. So join now and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Use the promo code, enter Locked On to activate the offer. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. And don't forget to use the promo code MIBOOKIE, MyBookie. And don't forget to use that promo code Locked On when creating your account to claim the bonus. You play, you win, you get paid. Let's get to this next question from KBR Heat Nation, at KBR Heat Nation on Twitter, asks, considering his contract extension, Winslow should hopefully see a more defined role this season. Do you think he'd serve better as a backup point forward or potentially the starting four, provided his three-point shot can hold at a slightly higher volume?
Now, we know for certain that he's not going to have a more defined role. That was something that Spoelstra said clearly on Media Day, and the fact that he thinks is an advantage. And as far as how he uses Winslow, is that he can play him all over the place and that he wants to see even more of that. So if anything, we're going to see a departure from any kind of defined role and just have Winslow go out there in every capacity where he's most effective. That might not work, but that's the plan going into the season.
And you know what? I'm okay with it, but I'm not okay with it. Like if a point forward is not a defined role. Like, I understand what Spo's take is on that. Like, no, he is not playing small forward for us. Like, he is going to handle the ball. He's going to guard fours. He's going to guard threes. He's going to guard point guards. He's going to be all over the place. I get that. But that even that is a defined role. It's more so than, you know, the last 3 years, he's been jerked around in every position. I mean, he's been basically a defined small forward. He's been a backup point guard. He's been a small ball four. I don't love Winslow's fit as the small ball four. I do think he's giving up a little too much size there. Defensively, he just provides more when he's guarding perimeter guys than more so than he does when he's guarding other bigs. So I like him on the perimeter more. I actually would hope that Spo fits him into a defined, undefined role, whatever that means, David. Let's not play him at three different positions, but if he's sort of this utility do-everything perimeter guy, that's still a defined role as opposed to being this do-everything perimeter and front court guy. Like, let's pick a spot on the court to put him in, and then what he does from that spot, we'll figure it out. But let's figure that much out at least, because I think he needs that.
I'm just not sure where Winslow fits best, which is one of my concerns as far as the contract is concerned, is that I think defensively, he hasn't lost a step. We saw that in the playoffs. We've seen that regularly, if not sporadically over the course of his career, that he can lock down anybody when he's engaged. And he's very, very, very solid and versatile in his defensive capacity. So that's not a question mark for me. It's just the offense. And I wonder whether or not he would just be better suited just focusing on the defensive aspect. But you know, too often he's asked to bring the ball up or he's asked to be a knockdown shooter. He can't just be out there as a defensive player, and he's not a good enough three-point shooter where he can be a 3-and-D player. But I wonder if he'd probably be better as a 4 or a 3 where he can concentrate on that 3-and-D aspect as a small forward and not necessarily as a point guard. Yeah, because as a point guard, he's not finishing at the rim nearly well enough. He can create shots for others, but that's where the versatility comes into play. You know, you'd want him surrounded with other playmakers where you just have one more, not the go-to playmaker, not the de facto point guard. You know, going into the season, I think you and I were both in agreement that backup point guard was probably his best role, But I think that might have changed, to be honest with you. I think we kind of see him as being just, he should focus more on what he's most efficient at and not necessarily trying to create so much for others that takes away from his strengths.
We've come full circle here on Justice Winslow because he started as a rookie as a small forward.
Right.
We've moved him around to basically small ball, like a small ball big. He's like, oh my God, he's guarding centers as a rookie in the playoffs. This is his future. This is the future of the NBA. This is where everything's going. We've got our guy. We've got our Draymond Green here. And then we moved him to point guard last year. Look, he's better with the ball in his hands. Look what he could do to create for others. He could bring the ball up. That's so cool. Like, no. I think we're back at the point where, yeah, I think he's a small forward. I just think that's what Justice Winslow's position is. A small forward who, like most small forwards, if you give him the ball, can do some stuff with it or just shoot it. And that's fine. But let's allow Winslow, let's not force Justice Winslow to be our version of Ben Simmons as point guard. Let's not force Justice Winslow to be our version of Draymond Green as a small ball four. Let's let Justice Winslow just be a better version of Andre Roberson. Which
there you go. That's
a lot of
exactly
Heat fans will
what
balk
I was thinking
at.
About. Yeah.
A lot of Heat fans are going to balk at that. But the Thunder fell off a cliff last year defensively without Andre Roberson. And if a better version of Andre Roberson who can shoot, like Andre Roberson cannot shoot a basketball. He is very, very bad at that.
Nor can Winslow he put the ball down and create for himself or others.
Winslow is substantially better at both of those things than Andre Roberson. I think he could be that, especially if you've got in that backcourt, if you've got him next to Dragic and Josh Richardson, who can basically lead the offense, and you've got a guy like James Johnson there, too, who can handle the ball and be Miami's Draymond Green, because James Johnson has been much more of that than Justice Winslow has. And you've got a guy like Whiteside in the middle, or even Olynyk, you know, at the center position, who can do things offensively. You don't need Winslow all of a sudden to score anything. Like you could, if Justice Winslow averages 8 to 10 points per game, plays all NBA level defense and knocks down shots when you ask him to, that is a really, really valuable player for Miami to have and locks down other opponents defensively. I'm with you 100%, David. I think you put him at small forward and just let him play that. Like amped up Andre Roberson, like super talented Rodney Magruder. Like just put him there and just let him do what he does, and like you said, let him focus on just being a 3-and-D wing, because at the end of the day, I think that's what he's best at.
Absolutely. Look, you can counter that and say that you'd need somebody as potent as Russell Westbrook or as dominant an offensive force as Westbrook is. That's fine, and I would say that you could probably focus on having Winslow at a 3 if you bring in Jimmy Butler and have him at the 2 and have him create and be the dominant offensive player there. Or you could hope that Richardson takes a leap at the 2 and you know, creates enough offense for himself and others that allows Winslow to focus on his strengths.
I think we need to take Winslow out of that backup unit at this point. I do think Winslow should be a starter to get more, to try to answer this question a little bit more. I like the idea of him coming off the bench, but when he comes off the bench, he basically ends up doing everything. And I want him to just do a couple things. I don't
if
want
you
him
had
to
a
do
guess,
everything.
If you had to guess what the starting lineup would be, what would you be? Because I think it's Dragic, Richardson, Winslow, again, barring a trade. Dragic, Winslow, Richardson, Olynyk, and Whiteside on opening night.
I agree, because, Deion and James Johnson will be out. But even when Deion comes back, I don't see him just being thrust into the starting lineup right away. That's just not the way Spoelstra's ever done things. Routinely, like when guys come back, I mean, he's done it with Dwayne Wade coming back from injury. You bring him off the bench. But I would not be surprised if that's working, Richardson and Winslow, if maybe Deion goes to the bench. I think James Johnson has more of a stronghold on that, more of a grip on that starting power forward spot than Olynyk does, but we'll see. We'll see. I think it's worked. So, I am concerned a little bit about that group defensively, just because, again, Olynyk and Whiteside in that front court, a little bit slow, does struggle to get down the court a little bit in transition. And we've seen that in the preseason, and we've got a question about that. And I feel like there's one very specific reason why Miami's transition defense has struggled. I'll tell you about it. But first, Locked On NBA is here for you every day, not just Tuesdays with us, every Monday, get the local experts on the biggest stories, and then stay with Locked On NBA all week long to get daily news and analysis on everything going on in the league. If you haven't listened to Locked On NBA, check it out. We're on it today. Today's our day, so go check it out. When you're done listening to us here, you can listen to us there. It's available on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts. Last question of this week's mailbag, David. Jonathan asks, for a team that's promoting continuity and in-house growth, why has our defense looked so poor and turnovers are regular occurrence even with our best distributor, Goran Dragic? Is this a cause for concern? So, two questions there, really. Why has the defense looked bad in the preseason? And why was Miami turning the ball over so much? Let's talk about the defense first, David, because I was wondering if this was the case right in the middle of the preseason, because our transition defense had been bad all preseason long, and I was wondering, is there the main reason for that is just not getting back on defense, especially if you're crashing the offensive boards, and if you're Miami, you had a size advantage for most of the preseason, given that you were starting Whiteside and Olynyk, right? You basically were playing two centers out there, so you had a size advantage. And then we heard that from Eric Reed and John Crotty, we're talking about, I think in the last preseason game, that Spoelstra is asking the team to crash the offensive glass more this season. That is going to be a way to go get secondary points. And I thought that's what I thought was the case. And it was good to hear that Eric Reed and John Crotty confirmed that, because that's why Miami's transition defense hurts. This team is too well coached for them to be a bad transition defense team. I couldn't wrap my head around any other reason why, other than the fact that they are crashing the offensive boards because they were not a good offensive team last year. They're going to try to be a good offensive team by crashing the boards this year. And yeah, there's going to be an adjustment period where, you know, Olynyk and Whiteside, or James Johnson and Whiteside, or Bam Adebayo, or whatever the combination is, those guys will crash the glass. And then the backcourt guys do need to get out in transition defense, as they always have. But now they're going to be playing a little bit more, you know, 2-on-4, 2-on-5, 3-on-4, 3-on-5 for a couple more seconds of that shot clock until, you know, after they're done crashing the glass, you know, the bigs get back onto defense. So there's going to be an adjustment period is what I'm trying to say. But I'm confident that they'll get there.
Now, is this going to be a theme for the regular season as well? This isn't just something that they've had him focus on over the course of the preseason, that according to what Crotty and Reed said.
Right.
This is.
I mean, why would they? Right. Why would you focus it on the preseason and then not do it in the regular season?
So, yeah, eventually they'll get there, I think. And I don't think that you can discount how important it has been that injuries have changed any hope of establishing the continuity early on. And I think that's where the second part of Jonathan's questions come into play, is that there are players adapting to new roles. You're getting players who are going to be part of the regular rotation, getting some regular minutes, guys like Duncan Robinson and even Rodney Magruder. For as good as he's been, I don't know that Spoelstra is going to be able to carve out a lot of playing time for him. And then once a James Johnson returns, you know, he's going to be getting a bulk of those minutes. You know, Deion Waiters, of course, is probably going to be getting a lot of playing time as well. So to me, I think that's where it is that you have this kind of, you know, mismatched lineup there where you're trying to piece guys in there as best you can. You know, you've got guys sitting out. You know, Richardson didn't play for a number of games. You know, Goran sits out a game here and there. Whiteside sits out a game. It's hard to establish that kind of rhythm. You're never quite sure of what you're doing. And then you're going up against different lineups too. There's no scouting report necessarily for how this team performs. You're going up against guys whose capabilities you're not completely familiar with. I think Miami has shown the ability to adapt pretty well over the course of Spoelstra's tenure, and I would assume that would be the case too. So as far as a cause for concern, I don't think it is.
I would hope that this is another reason why Miami should maybe move towards a switching style of defense. I know Spo's been reluctant to do that. He's talked about the values of having guys just guard other guys as opposed to just grind it out, switching everything.
Yeah,
I just, when you're in transition like that, and look, we just talked about the value of having a guy like Josh Richardson and Justice Winslow start on the perimeter for this team. One of the reasons is because they're so versatile and can switch. If you're getting, you know, two guys to crash the glass and then you're letting the other guys get back in transition, you want them to be able to pick up whoever's on the ball, whoever's the biggest threat offensively. And then when, you know, the two front court guys, whether it's Whiteside and maybe James Johnson, if in the case of the projected starters, you let them get back and basically just guard whoever's left, right? And yeah, maybe that's not pretty, especially with a guy like Whiteside, who's not the most versatile defender. He just basically is what he is. But there, it's something to think about, I think, if you're Spo, and I think we might see more switching, and I think we already have seen more switching in the preseason. I think there's been a more willingness to do that, especially off of pick and rolls and screens when the other team is in transition or semi-transition. So I think we've already seen a little bit more of that. So we've seen this is going to be, again, Spo, just like he went from the drive and kick offense into a more off-ball movement offense and more all those dribble handoffs and things like that last season, we're seeing a new change defensively. Offensively and defensively this year, Spo continues to evolve the team. He's never one to just basically roll the ball out and play the same way year over year. So as far as the turnovers, I chalk that up to preseason. Sure. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard to get everybody to adjust. You know, you've been training individually over the course of the off season. I think you have a couple workouts here and there. We know guys were at the American Airlines Arena, facing Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant and others, and those were fine, but those are informal workouts. It's not quite the same thing, and you know, it's tough adjusting to, especially for a defensive team like Miami. They're going to get into a lot of foul trouble, and things happen. And you got players in and out of the lineup, like I said before. So the preseason certainly plays a big factor. I don't think it'll be something to worry about. I think Miami is pretty much in control. They're aware of their limitations, and I think they do what they can to mitigate those. So I'm not too worried about it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm as worried about it as I was last year. I mean, this is a team that turns the ball over frequently enough. I mean, they're, you know, probably about average in the league without looking at the numbers, I would say, maybe below average.
Right.
Especially when you got guys like James Johnson, Kelly Olynyk, and Whiteside, you know, fumbling the ball away on occasion. But and then especially when Deion Waiters comes back. But nothing out of the usual, I guess, on that end.
Yeah.
But that's all we have for today. Thank you for listening. That wraps up our two-part mailbag to kick off the week. As always, you can reach us by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com or on Twitter by using the hashtag AskLOHeat. And, of course, make sure to hit that subscribe button on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, or whatever you use to listen. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.
Thanks for listening. One last thing before you go. If you run a company and you're unhappy with your return from advertising online or in print, try something new and advertise on a podcast here at Locked On Heat. This is a great opportunity for local South Florida businesses to connect with Heat fans. More and more people are listening every day. 50% of U.S. households listen to a podcast, and 1 in 5 Americans between ages 18 and 49 listen to at least one a month. That's according to Nielsen. Thanks to the rise in mobile options from iTunes to Spotify and more, to your smart speaker at home, there's more ways than ever to listen to podcasts. Now is the time to get in. Be ahead of your competition and start advertising on a podcast with us. Our rates are reasonable and based on the number of listens, so you get what you pay for, with numbers to back it up. Whereas print, TV, and radio ads are a shot in the dark. You have no idea who is reading, watching, or listening. That's not the case with podcasts. If you want to reach engaged, passionate, and knowledgeable South Floridians, this is the way to do it. For more information on next steps, email us at lockedonheat@gmail.com, and we could be talking about your company on the next episode.